So Assembly Bill 2060 is what is funding the program. And this last round, you're correct, there were eight counties and we were one of eight selected. And our program really is kind of unique out of the eight in that it has a component specifically for employers that I'll get into some detail on that later.
There has been, from what I know, I've shared with you that I've done, I worked, seems like decades, in workforce development, and you're always knowing of grants that are going around and when to apply for them. One of the things I know is that in 2005, then San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris, who was just sworn in as our senator today, she created a reentry initiative called Back on Track. And I think in 2014, that was very much a program or a pilot program in L.A. They used evidence-based strategies and also wanted to strengthen public safety, reduce recidivism, and improve individual lives. Eric Holder was part of that, and that was a federal grant. Mm-hmm. Can you describe how those circumstances, because I believe that came in 2008, I think the Department of Justice decided to disseminate funds for these purposes. How long did it take for our county to go ahead and apply for a grant like this?
Well, we've been applying for a number of grants related to evidence-based practices that focus on a lot of different areas of offender rehabilitation, and you know, workforce development and employment is just one piece. So we've been doing that as long as that program existed, so since before 2009. But this particular grant only just recently became available. I know I've worked with Connie before at Employment Training Division, looking at a couple other grants that we were not quite successful in getting. But this particular one, you know, we made it, I think, because we had we have a positive experience with our AB 109 population, where we've employed a vocational counselor and an education specialist, vocation education specialist, with our highest risk offenders, the ones that were realigned to us. And getting them successfully employed and getting workforce experience and having positive outcomes. I mean, when we can impact the highest risk people and get them on a positive track, I mean, that's remarkable. So we decided we would expand that to the lower risk people, the people on felony probation, so they don't become those high risk offenders.
So this was, you applied for this last year, or was it the fiscal year before that?
It was just last year, yeah.
So it's really new.
Yeah.
And you're implementing it this month. I know you have an event that we're going to talk about in a little bit that's coming up as well. That's very exciting. One of the things that I find fascinating is that a lot of grant money goes to big cities, big counties. We're talking about the counties up here, I think Humboldt might be the only county in the northwestern corridor of California that's received this grant.
The rural north. This is us, and Humboldt's really pretty good about getting grants. We have a lot of really innovative programs and ideas. We have excellent collaboration between agencies and departments, both you know, public and private. So I think that we have a really good foundation here. Plus, we happen to be just about the perfect size for a rural county. There are some that are extremely small, mm-hmm. That are surrounding us, and it's really kind of hard because there's no base in the community for them with community-based organizations or other service agencies or treatment programs, for instance. And we're kind of a small, medium-sized county and have a fairly good representation of community-based organizations to serve offenders.
So you've said you've had other grants before. This grant is unique in other opportunities. I'm hoping that possibly the pilot of this program here in this county maybe can instill in other counties, maybe they could figure, hey, we can do this as well.
Absolutely.
So they're kind of looking at us
sure,
now.
Sure, sure. And I think with the added component of really developing employers and kind of teaching them how to better onboard offenders, that's a really unique component and can be really helpful.
Now, that's where because we were going to have Connie on the show right. this evening because she's from Employment and Training Division, so Workforce Development, the infamous Workforce Investment Boards and all those letters that she has to deal with all the time. So her aspect of this is to develop the programs for the workforce development aspect of this?
Correct. So it's a partnership between Probation and Employment Training Division, Sheriff's Department, and then private employers.
Also, I think one of your partners includes the College of the Redwoods?
True.
So yeah, there's an educational component
yes.
in there as well.
Right.
So, and then, of course, Dave's Killer Bread Foundation, just giving them a shout-out right away. We'll talk more about Dave's Killer Bread later on, because it's one of the bigger components that fascinated me. But let's talk about the length of time that this grant is, number one. How long does this extend? Is it
we have a three-year grant.
Oh, three
yeah,
years.
I believe so, yeah. And Connie's probably, it comes through her department. I'm not
yeah.
real sharp on what those details are, but I'm pretty sure it's a three-year grant. And then we'll be rolling it out as they've already started, actually, in working with some employers. But the big event is on January 11th. So we'll be seeing Dave's Killer Bread Foundation on that day and working with some new employers, engaging them in the process, and hopefully expanding our placements and opportunities in the community.
So let's talk about Dave's Killer Bread Foundation.
Sure.
Dave's Killer Bread Foundation has been enlisted to work with participating local businesses. As you said, there's an event next Wednesday.
Yep.
On the 11th, and where's that event going to be at?
That's going to be at the County Office of Education on Myrtle Avenue in the Sequoia Center from 1 to 4 o'clock.
And if somebody wants to, who's listening this evening or who knows a business that might want to go to that?
They should call... let me find my information here. Sorry.
While you're finding that, I'll go ahead and talk about Dave Killer Bread Foundation. It's a nonprofit arm of Oregon-based organic bread maker.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call Lynette Mullen at 707-845-0467. Excuse me. Or ETD Program Manager Connie Lorenzo at 707-441-4607. And they can give you more information on the event.
So, once again, Dave's Killer Bread Foundation, the company's co-founder, and 30% of their employees are ex-offenders. So this is someone who not only walks the talk, but has found a lot of success in these programs, and that alone should attract employers from this area to see what this is all about. The company started a foundation that encourages and helps employers successfully employ individuals with criminal backgrounds. Now, we talked about supervised populations. So is it just for offenders, or is it for other? Is it for felons who might be in the another part of the judicial system that needs supervision?
It's specifically for people that are under county supervision. In our county, it's principally felons on supervised formal probation. As I said earlier, we already have a program for AB 109 that's funded with those dollars that were allocated to our county to address those concerns. So this is specifically for formal probation cases, okay. ones that have probation officers assigned to them. And the basic characteristics of folks on probation here, we have about 1,000 roughly that are on formal probation for a felony. And they typically get a 3-year sentence on supervised probation, usually with a stint in jail at the very beginning. So we're hopeful that we can connect with them while they're in jail. There's College of the Redwoods courses in jail that can help them start getting prepared for release and connect them up with our case managers through Employment Training Division and the vocational counselor. We have found that before this program, on average, the folks that were coming out of jail, only 17% of our formal probation cases had employment already lined up. So this is trying to address that. The statistics are pretty clear that folks who don't have employment engaged really quickly upon release from jail are more prone to recidivate and commit new crimes and that result in more victimization and new convictions. So those percentages range from, you know, 20% to as high as 70%, depending on what location you're looking at. But the data is really clear scientifically that if you get people employed in proactive or productive activities that they're able to sustain themselves with, put housing over their head and feed themselves, that you actually can drop those recidivism numbers down into the single digits, which is really quite remarkable. And locally here, our own recidivism data for formal probation cases is about 21% for having a new conviction for either a misdemeanor or felony while on supervision. And we're hoping, just like the other other national data, that we can drop those numbers down into the low single digits.
Where do we rate as a county in our own state as far as recidivism?
I don't know. I've never seen a ranking, but I think that there's going to be more data available in the next year. Kamala Harris has done a real bang-up job in the Department of Justice trying to get more data available. And then they're making, like, data dashboards or, I don't know, kind of integrated databases mm-hmm. where you can do that kind of comparisons, do regions, counties, and so forth. So we're looking forward to seeing what she has to offer.
I bet. And you're listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. I'm Brenda Starr, your host this evening. Mike Est is Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer, Bill Damiano, and we are discussing the Humboldt Second Chance Program. It uses new grant monies and aims to reduce recidivism and unemployment among local offenders out on probation. Your comments, feelings, questions, concerns are welcome. Please call us at the studio using 826-4805. Or toll-free at 800-640-5911. If you don't want to be on the air, you can text us at 492-5478. That's 707-492-5478. Jess, maybe you look a little confused, all right? Or you can just call and she'll read it for you already. We do welcome your calls. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. About how many participants do you see utilizing this program?
We're hoping that there will be around 100, but we'll see once we get rolling.
And how would it be probation officers that would recommend that they be in this program, or is it they're self-instilled, I want to be part of this program? How does that work?
It'll be a combination of the two. I mean, probation officers, when we first open a case, we do an assessment of their risk to reoffend. We're going to be targeting people who are not the highest risk to reoffend in this program. They'll be moderate risk to low, high, if that makes any sense.
How's that determined?
Well, we have actuarial tools that we use that are good predictors of future behavior, just like insurance companies, based on tens of thousands of offenders and their outcomes. So we use these tools. We'll identify people. We'll refer them over to employment training and identify them while they're in jail. If a person's interested in participating, obviously motivation is a huge factor. We'll start engaging them there. As I said, with CR, some of the services that they have, working on employment soft skills and preparing for interviewing. Once somebody is released, they'll then move on into the job market, where they'll go through 2 weeks of training. Basically, they'll get stipends to participate, so they will have income for participating in the schooling, which we thought was a pretty critical component.
I think,
you know,
so.
It helps them make sure that they can, you know, get their needs met while they're getting trained in all those skills on how to communicate at work, how to problem solve, how to deal with conflict in the workplace, showing up on time, proper dress, you know, things like that, how to interview, obviously. And then at that point, once they've completed the certification under the classes, we'd start looking for work experience placements for them so they can get some work under their belt. Could be short term, anything from, you know, half a day to multiple weeks. Again, being paid for that by through the grant and or our match money in AB 109. And then we would be looking toward job placements where they could do apprenticeships, where Employment Training Division has access to funds that could pay half the wage, and the grant will pay the other half of the wage, and hopefully get people into successful employment experiences.
It sounds like you just said maybe 100% of the person's initial wages are being paid by grant money, whether it be this grant or similar grants through the
county
state of
match.
California, county match.
County match.
Wow, that's incredible, because usually you're given a discount or a tax write-off for some big corporation. I know Marshall's, right. You know, a lot of places do that, that just makes it a little bit more successful when you have that kind of a buy-in.
As I said, we've had this this model going with our AB 109 population, so we've already used some of that money to do that, and we found it successful. So
is this you talked about this as a three-year program. Is that kind of match up with the fact that you said that, you know, somebody might still be inside, and when they come out there, they have a probation officer, and that time period, this 3 years that they might go through, is that a typical rate of time, and that's why this program is at length?
No, the grant program is 3 years. That was the design of the funding mechanism for it. And I don't think that the people will be in the actual program part for the full 3 years.
Mm-hmm. But they could still be on probation, though.
They would absolutely be on probation. But once people get established in a job, you know, where they're gainfully employed and making income, and they're successful, and they're interacting with pro-social people, as opposed to antisocial folks that they were interacting with before, they don't tend to need as much supervision. I mean, they're pretty much self-managing at that point. So that's the idea behind this. We've seen this repeatedly with people on probation. We've done programs like this. People have always had access to the job market and other programs like that. We always make referrals in standard probation, but this is a more focused program with more support for that front end with the training piece, which we think is going to be really helpful, plus the additional component of the Dave's Killer Bread Foundation work with employers, giving them helpful hints and training on how to onboard people more successfully, people with criminal histories, how to work with them and to help them be successful.
Well, you mentioned people with criminal history. So understanding people with criminal backgrounds, I think it would help the community as well as potential employers to that kind of understanding. Is there a component of this to educate not only the businesses but community? I know there's a so-called public safety element of that as part of that education. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I think that part of the presentation with Dave's Killer Bread is really going to be focusing on that and trying to demystify working with criminal offenders. The reality is most employers out there right now probably have criminal offenders working for them that they just don't know about. So the reality is the benefit of this program, you know that they have an issue. The folks are typically extremely appreciative of an opportunity. Having a felony conviction can be a real barrier to employment and success. But I know that all of the offenders I ever worked with and supervised, when they were given a chance to be employed, they were so grateful, and they can be such loyal employees for having that opportunity. And when they turn their lives around, it's just a remarkable thing. It's really, I have so much respect for these people and what they accomplish in turning their lives around. Yes, they make mistakes, and if they are motivated to change, we all benefit from investing in that and supporting them in that change. So, you know, I think it's a really good program from that standpoint. We're restoring people to our community. making them, you know, contributing members again. And I think that that's really important. Plus, you know, the reality is that at this time when we have such low unemployment, that we're going to be providing some potential employees for people that are having a hard time filling vacancies. And we're going to help them be successful in onboarding these people, which I think is a tremendous thing in this particular hiring climate.
This is true. We've seen this before in the 90s, and it was very helpful. And any programs that people can get their hands on just helped tremendously. So the bulk of the funds is then for training. Who else is contracted with this program? We mentioned the CR.
They're not really contracted with this. They're already providing those services. So we've been working on separate funding for, it's the AB 86 grant, adult education, when it shifted away from high schools and school districts to the college districts. So Corrections has been working with them for quite some time, and we've just this past year implemented a number of new classes within the jail as well as on the outside of the jail, connected main and designed specifically for criminal offenders that we're working with. So again, it's addressing soft skills, it's addressing certification for particular jobs like food handling and construction safety and things like that, so that when they're going to get employment, they've already got this training and the certification under their belt, and an employer can feel secure that they have that knowledge and experience when they're getting in there.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of help available.
Yes.
Now, how does one enter the program? And once they enter it, what's the next step for them?
Well, again, as I said, we've got the referral process. When it gets to the point of them looking for a job placement where there's on-the-job training with that 50-50 subsidy, employers are going to have the same opportunity they always have. They still get to interview the applicant, and if it's a match, fine. If it's not a match, that's okay too. You get to decide that. We're hoping that by going through those earlier stages, we'll weed out the people who aren't committed to actually, you know, working toward getting employment and keeping employment, so they'll self-select out. But we're hoping that by working with employers on how to be successful with these guys, and by preparing the offenders themselves for the hiring process, that we'll get more more people hired and put into positions.
So there will be soft skills, like you said, showing up for work on time, showing up on time, et cetera, the things that people take for granted that everyone knows, and you might not know that, or you might not have been in that situation before. Or is this a classroom type of setting that people will be in for that part of the training?
The 2 weeks in the job market will be classroom-based. Then there will be work experience placements that will be different. Additionally, we'll connect them up with certification programs through CR, as I said, that are more hands-on and practical, that are about specific things, whether it's food handling, could be construction trades and safety and so forth, so that they, in janitorial services, things like that, where they're taught specific skills, how to safely use the cleaning solutions and so forth, so that they're prepared to go to work. Then with that, the on-the-job training, where they're getting some subsidy, the point of that really is to give the employer an opportunity to get the person to train on the job for half price, basically, and that person's going to be trained by them. So they can learn exactly what the agency or business wants them to do, how they want them to do it, and they have an opportunity to train them at half price. So they can take up to 4 months, I believe, on that particular part of the program.
And when someone comes into a program like that, they don't have anything to unlearn when you're there.
Yeah.
With someone and this is your potential employer, and they're sure teaching you how they want it done. Which is a significant advantage for you if you know that. Now, we talk about people, but you know, let's talk about their families as well. It's not as if these are all going to be single people who don't have families, who might not have children. You know, a lot of times when people are getting out of jail or prison, their family might have moved up here because maybe this is where they were incarcerated. I'm wondering, are there any ancillary services? So somebody will get into the program, they'll have 2 weeks of training, they'll do a work experience, they will get hired by somebody. Is there ancillary services to keep that family moving forward? I know that a lot of things that are of the detriment of people keeping jobs, whether that be childcare or transportation or their health care or, you know, things like that also contribute to if you right. stay on that job or not.
Well, probation officers typically, I mean, just by our very nature, are brokers of services. So we link people to services. And it's not just the offender. We will work through the issues that are confronting the whole family. We recognize that that can be a barrier to success as well. If somebody's concerned about whether their family's going to be able to be housed and fed, Those are important things. We can assist with some things with some of the AB 109 funding, but we're more limited in other areas for formal probation cases. However, we're pretty knowledgeable about the agencies in the community that can provide those support services for child care, referrals for housing, church-based or religious-based organizations that support people with some food or food banks and travel vouchers and all of that. So we try to work with the whole family and get them all stabilized. And it's, you know, an offender going into jail might have been the very catalyst for creating all of those issues in a family. So obviously we're looking at that when they're coming out, trying to get them as stable as possible so that they can actually succeed.
Yeah, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of support to keep the job once you get the job. I like that, brokers of services. That should be a tagline there.
We are agents of change.
Agents of change. I like that too. And you're listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. I'm Brenda Starr, your host this evening, and my guest is Bill Damiano from Employment Training Division. Oh, no. He's the Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer. Connie's not here. She's wheezing and hacking at home. Connie, get better soon. We're discussing the Humboldt Second Chance Program. It uses new grant monies and aims to reduce recidivism and unemployment among our local offenders out on probation. Your comments, questions, concerns, feelings are welcome. Please call us at the studio using 826-4805. If you're out of the area, 800-640-5911. And if you don't want to be on the air, you can text us at 492-5478 and Jess will ask your question for us. So, how about, we talked a little bit about the ancillary services. So, success, what does success look like? I mean, you've been in these programs for a while. What does success look like to you?
Well, I think that success is an offender who is participating and actively engaging in pro-social activities, learning ways to interact with people who aren't engaging in criminal behavior anymore. Hopefully they're addressing the other issues of whether they have substance abuse or mental health issues so that those aren't going to become stumbling blocks in their success. And probation officers will help with that with referrals or direct services with them to try and help them with strategies on how to manage cravings or, you know, how to avoid associations with the wrong kinds of people. And success is, you know, it's varied. We're human beings. Something better than what they had that got them in jail is a success. Obviously, the ultimate success would be somebody that is engaged in employment, not doing anything illegal, not creating any more victims out there, hopefully being happy and successful, and so that they don't do criminal things anymore. They're not inclined to do that. And we certainly have seen, I know in my career, I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of people succeed. And that's probably the only reason that I'm still doing this after 28 years. If I didn't see successes, you know, it'd be really difficult to do day in, day out. We deal with some folks that have backgrounds and have had things happen to them that are really traumatic and damaging and not particularly supportive. So seeing people come from that kind of a background where they really had very little that was positive and pro-social, and turning things around to where everything is positive and they're feeling proud of themselves for the first time in their life, and they're regaining contact with family members that quit talking to them a while ago, and they're able to wake up in the morning without having to use drugs, and they're getting up and doing something, contributing to the community. I think that's all very positive stuff, and I've seen people beam, and it's just, I mean, it'll bring a tear to your eye to see folks that have been, you know, 10 years, 20 years in this kind of a lifestyle that turn it around and have that kind of success. When they can feel proud and their family is proud for them, I mean, it breaks my heart. I'm so happy for them.
That is something that does keep you going. It's true. We hear a lot. You know, we see so much crime on TV, whether it's reality, whether it's a TV show, whether it's made up. There's so much, and it has a propensity to have people believe, oh, people are just in and out these doors all the time. Oh, there never can be helped. Well, then it's people like you who just speak about, look, I couldn't do this job if there weren't successes. Right. Because people want to be a success. People want to be happy. They want to pursue their happiness. Sometimes they don't even know they have a skill to pursue. And I'm thinking that this a program like this is going to also elevate people's potentiality, maybe their dreams, maybe, well, gee, I didn't think I'd ever be able to get a job there, but they're training me to do this. And that's got to be a big attraction to this program. What has been the response so far from people who are looking to utilize this program?
Well, we've had positive responses from both employers and the offenders themselves. They really appreciate the opportunity to go through training and be paid for it. That's been a very positive aspect. And certainly the employers that have had successful placements with them are happy. They've got now employees that they've been able to train themselves, that we've been able to offset some of the costs for that. And they've got good employees that are loyal and producing for them, and just really, really happy to be in that kind of a situation. You know, and what we find, and it's really pretty remarkable, the offenders that we work with, they may not know when they're coming into the program what their skills and strengths are. Living the lifestyles that they live, they develop a lot of skills and strengths and resilience that until you're put into a particular situation, you don't get to recognize it. They've always been put into an antisocial situation. It's hard to see the positive stuff there. But when we take those same skills and characteristics, their persistence and steadfastness in wanting to do this job and make their families proud, they're just, as I said, they're very resilient. Some of the things that they overcome to get their lives straightened out is just remarkable. And that in itself is a strength. So I think that the employers are quite happy with that. I know I would be if I was an employer of these guys. I can't hire them at probation, but if I was an employer out in the community, certainly I would want to help people turn their lives around.
There are a lot of transferable skills that people who don't think they have them have. And it's amazing when you start listing things. And it's like, as you said, well, it you know, you have to have somewhat of a brain to even want to rob a bank. It requires a certain skill set. It requires organizational skills. I mean, they might even be using algebra and they don't even know it. And once you finally tell somebody that, well, this skill, this is transferable to this job, it's kind of a big light that goes off in your head. As far as gender goes, what's kind of a breakdown? Do we have a breakdown of how many women and versus men might be in this program, or is this something that we're going to look at 3 years from now?
Yeah, in the end, we'll know more. Right now, the population of that 1,000 people on formal probation is about 70% male, 30% female. It's about what we have in the jail as well. So I think that's reflective of our local population. How many males and females will participate in the program, I have no way of knowing. I mean, it really is going to depend on the offenders themselves, but I don't think it's going to be restricted by gender.
It's interesting because it's kind of the flip side of when you look at social services and say temporary aid to needy families, or it's probably 70% women and 30% men. So it's kind of like
some of that changed though over the last couple of years with the Affordable Care Act, because it made Medi-Cal services and other services available to single males. They had typically been locked out of social services benefits. So, you know, we've seen a lot of benefit to them with that they can get their health concerns and mental health concerns addressed, as well as being able to access other services within the community. So I see that as a positive thing. More is accessible and fewer things are crimes with all the changes in the sentencing laws. Some of that's good, some of it's not so good, but we have what we have, and I think that Humboldt County in particular is doing some remarkable things to try and help people who are motivated to change, to motivate people who aren't quite knowing that they need to change yet, and then, you know, monitoring the people who absolutely aren't going to change, those people that you talked about that are revolving door people that really aren't motivated to do anything but criminal behavior. And we have those, certainly. It's a small percentage of our overall population. I said 21% of our folks end up recidivating while they're on supervision. Those people get policed by my officers. But the remainder of the people, our real job, as I said, as agents of change, is to really try and figure out what's going to motivate them, use our training and skills to get them to start contemplating what it would take to change, and then giving them the tools and referrals to do that.
And as there, we talk about if someone might have a drug or alcohol, either maybe it's not active, but it could be, well, I'm just waiting till I get out and then I could do this again. It might not be the best frame of mind to go into a program like this. Is there a component where you deal with that right away before you see if someone can be in the program? I mean, are there little layers that get peeled away to see if somebody, if there is a jewel in here that's wanting to receive the training?
Everybody's got the jewel. We have to We have to find that. That's what I always found the most interesting part of my job, is finding out what is that thing in that person.
Yeah.
I think I've probably only worked with one person in my history that I thought was pure evil. Everybody else had some redeeming quality, some flicker of light inside them that I was trying to find. We're going to have people that have lots of complex issues, and we're accustomed to doing that on probation. If this program's focusing on people while they're starting in jail, at this point in history in Humboldt County, it's probably the best time to be identifying people in jail to start the program. We have, through AB 109 funding, we've helped pay for a body scanner, a mail scanner, so that drugs are really difficult to get into the jail at this point. We're helping to pay for, or they have their own canines in there that are sniffing out drugs. So people that are in custody should be clean and sober for the most part. If we're engaging them as we intend to in jail and preparing them for entry into the community or reentry, and we know that they have substance abuse issues, we can start working with them while they're in custody.
That wouldn't preclude them from being in this program, would it?
No. Well, no. I mean, no, not at all. In fact, 70% of our people have some kind of substance-related problems. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to work on strategies for them to avoid relapse, and as I said earlier, avoid associating with people who are likely to pull them off the track.
We have a caller on the line. Jamie, welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hello. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Hey, Jamie.
So I just wanted to call because, having been involved with the probation department for 13 years, starting in the year oh gosh, 1990, and having watched it since then, and having known Bill all that time, he's a great guy. He really is. He's like, you know, the dream probation officer.
Thanks, Jamie.
You're welcome, Bill. And that's really all I want to say. He's a good guy. I'm glad people are working with him.
Thanks, Jamie.
All right, take care.
You're a good guy.
Thanks. Bye.
It really does help to have a personality, an open heart, and an open mind when you're working with people, regardless of what the population is. And I think people like Jamie see that in you, Mr. Broker of Services. So are there best practices from other counties that our county will be using, since it sounds like this grant has been done in similar areas? Well, like I said, urban areas, larger counties, but are there similar best practices that go throughout these programs?
There's best practices, evidence-based practices, whatever you want to call them, weaved throughout the program. As I said, we're doing assessments with validated instruments for measuring their risk to reoffend. We'll be making referrals to Employment Training Division that uses their best practices in how to train folks for employment and prepare them for that. We'll be partnering up with Dave's Killer Bread Foundation that also uses evidence-based practices in how to help employers onboard people and prepare them for bringing them into the workforce, as well as for developing uniform training plans for people they intend to bring on, so that there's consistency and clarity of what's expected of the people. And then, you know, basically throughout the whole system, it's the ongoing supports and collaboration. So my staff, my probation officers, will be working with vocational counselors and education specialists. We'll be communicating with CR on how the people are doing in their classes. We'll be communicating and supporting employers when the people get out and start getting placed. So all of those things are best practices. I think coordinated services mm-hmm. is a best practice. Using things that have evidence of being effective are also things that are going to be woven in, and there's different things in the different fields: the probation side, the alcohol and drug side, employment side, education side, and so forth. So I think all of that, we've got all the pieces, and as I said, Humboldt, we do things pretty well. We're pretty coordinated and very collaborative, which can't be said in a lot of counties.
Right.
You know, there's especially a lot of rural counties. There's a lot of infighting for monies, and a lot of siloing of services. And I think that we've overcome that in our county through a couple of decades or a few decades of grant programs that have really broken down those barriers and silos and made us interdependent and actually created ways for us to leverage more funding. We've been more successful in doing that. So there's really a lot of advantages to that.
It sounds like it. It sounds like when you're partnering with so many people, that's also the state of California loves that. When you're partnering with other agencies and showing a bigger bang for their buck, so to speak, that's very helpful, very, very helpful in programs. Let's get back to Dave's Killer Bread Foundation.
Sure.
Which, how long now, because, you know, I did mention that the company's co-founder and 30% of their employees are ex-offenders. How long has Dave's Killer Bread Foundation been in existence? Do you know?
I think that's Connie's area of specialty. She knew more about them. All I know is, you know, Dave himself got out of prison after a fairly serious felony and created this organic bread company and with some partners and had obviously a great success. You see it in all of our local markets, and I love that.
It's good bread.
I love that bread. Yum, yum. Good stuff. And then when he sold out his part of the company, if I understand things correctly, and started the foundation to start working with other people. And that's a fairly recent thing.
Wow.
So they've been doing that, and he's devoting his time to that aspect of the business. As far as I know, I think that's something I heard Connie say. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm saying the right thing.
Well, there's a lot of things that Dave is going to offer. And is Dave himself or the foundation going to be here next Wednesday?
It'll be
the foundation staff. They'll be talking about the business incentives, the wage subsidies, mentoring, and other assistance. In fact, they offer assistance to business owners and employers who want to participate in this program. It's not just like, okay, here's our story now, goodbye.
No.
Which is another thing that's very helpful in programs like this, that you have some kind of consistency, you have someone who you can call. Okay,
right.
Things have always popped up. There's no new scenarios, but somebody knows what to do about something.
Absolutely. So they're going to have ongoing support for employers. And again, that was the unique aspect of Humboldt's proposal, is the other seven that were awarded in this round of funding didn't have that component.
Oh, do you know who the other seven were? Because I couldn't find that out.
I don't.
I went on the state's website. I mean, I found out who got grants for last year and all that, but I couldn't find anything about this recent one because I was kind of curious. And I want to know if we were the only very, very, very rural county amongst this. I'm also thinking, Bill, that because of the success that you've had, that maybe we were more likely to get this grant now?
Well, I think, as I said, we're pretty good at getting grants. And we have a lot of really good practices here. I think that Department of Health and Human Services and probation and a lot of our other partners, whether they're public agencies, are focused on evidence-based practices and have been doing them for a number of years. This isn't new. We've had blended funding, as I said, for decades, which is really kind of the model these days. So, you know, we've had a lot of success at working through a lot of those issues that used to keep people from being successful at working together. That's not to say everything's perfect. Collaboration can be clobberation sometimes. But it's, you know, we continue to at least have respectful dialogue about issues and work together to try and find solutions to address any barriers that are coming up.
And once again, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. I'm Brenda Starr. My guest is Bill Damiano, and we're discussing the Humboldt Second Chance Program. Feel free to give us a call, 826-480-5800, 640-5911, or you can text your calls to 492-5478. We welcome your calls. What are some... I don't want to get into negative stuff, but I just want to talk about what are some myth-busting things that, say, an employer will share with other businesses in regards to hiring the population?
Well, that offenders aren't going to be reliable, you know, that they're not going to be appreciative of the opportunity. They're using this as a way to bilk a business. That's absolutely not true in a majority of the cases. The myth that these are people that are different and less good employees because they have convictions, which is ridiculous because, as I said, many businesses already have people committing crimes working for them. They just don't know about them. They haven't been exposed yet. So,
well, you don't have to put that down on your job application.
No, and I know a lot of businesses often find out that they're being stolen from right under their nose. They just don't know about it yet. The benefits of this kind of a program is that you've got people that know about offenders, know how to work with offenders, and can help the offenders be successful, as well as supporting employers. You know, if a probation officer can P-test an offender that has a substance abuse problem and keep them on the straight and narrow, and give them other support so that they aren't prone to relapse, whereas you might have 10 other employees in your agency or business that are using drugs and alcohol, maybe not showing up on Mondays after payday, you know, because they partied a little too hard over the weekend or whatever. They're not being P-tested. They're not being helped and supported by all these other agencies. So there's a lot of benefits to this particular program.
There is a lot of benefits to businesses. And as we spoke before, there is an event next Wednesday on the 11th. And tell us about that event again.
That'll be at the County Office of Education on Myrtle Avenue at the Sequoia Center, brand new center. It's really beautiful, from 1 to 4 on January 11th. And Dave's Killer Bread, Probation Department, Humboldt County Employment Training Division, Economic Development Department, College of the Redwoods, Dave's Killer Bread will all be there with a program and talk about all the different aspects of this particular grant program.
And you'll be there?
I will be there. Yep.
Have you, are there any successes that you'd like to share as far as employers in our county who have participated in this before?
Connie probably would have more information on that, and I'm sorry that I don't.
That's okay. Well, we're going to give Connie's number out anyway,
yeah.
Which is 707-441-4607, is that correct?
4607.
All right, and that's Connie Lorenzo. She's the director of Humboldt County Employment Division. I think we used to call it EDD years ago. Shows how old I am. and also, anyway, so if you have questions, please call Connie Lorenzo, 441-4607. Lynette Mullen from Projects Delivered also can be reached at 707-845-0467. Any other people we need to... talk about?
I think those are the main folks.
And how many have you had? Do you know if anybody signed up, or that's not your part?
No, I don't know about that.
Well, we wanted.
Sorry, I should have asked Lynette before I called her off on
well,
the meeting.
Well, that's okay.
Here today.
Well, you know, as it turns out, in radio, what happens is if everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to be there. And then you just, because it is an evening show and you've worked all day. So that's just the way it is. We might be able to put some more information, though, on our KHSU website. We do have things there in regards to our program, and we can either put a link there or something else so people can, if they want someone else to listen to the show or to get some more information.
Absolutely.
And any other things that you would like to say about the program that you're working with now?
Well, I'm really appreciative of all the support that I've experienced in the community. I mean, we've been to a number of city council and board meetings and Rotary clubs and other service clubs and talked to various people, chambers of commerce. People have been very warm and receptive and asked really good questions. And I'm very hopeful that employers or potential employers that maybe have not, stressed employing criminal offenders before will open their eyes and hearts to, considering an opportunity. And again, it's pretty low risk. We're going to offset a lot of the costs and we'll provide a lot of support. That's not to, to look at it through rose-colored glasses and think that every case is going to be a success. But we are doing everything in our power to make it a success. So I think that should be really appealing. I know it would be appealing to me if I was trying to hire people. And I look forward to working with employers out there. I know I've always appreciated folks who gave our offenders an opportunity to work and support themselves so that they could actually stop doing crimes.
It sounds like you do an awful lot of public speaking, Bill.
There's a bit of public speaking involved. There is. And there's a lot of education, really. I know I've talked to, before this program, I would go to service clubs and get asked questions about, well, why don't we just lock people up and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, I'm glad it's a great question. We only have so much room at the inn. There are historical references there as well. You know, people, they got to go somewhere. They're ultimately going to get out of jail. And if we don't prepare them to be successful in the community, then, we're falling down on the job, and I don't think that we have a right to expect people to behave differently if we're not going to help them learn new skills. I know I've had questions asked about, why would we invest all this money in these people? It's like, well, these people are people's brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and grandpas and nieces and nephews. I have family members that are in the criminal justice system. And, you know, my family came from Australia, people that were sent there as convicts. So, you know, I'm really grateful that people gave my family members opportunities.
That's a very good point. You know, that's a very good point,
it's just,
Bill.
It's just people, you know, and really they're part of our community, whether we like it or not. So I think we all play a part in helping people be successful. If we don't help them, then shame on us. You know, basically, and you really don't have a right to expect them to be any different if you didn't put a hand out and try and help someone.
That's right, a hand out and a hand up. And it's called Humboldt Second Chance Program, and it's called that for a reason. If some people will be very, very successful, some people will move on to other avenues that they didn't even think that hadn't occurred to them in their life before. Once you move into a realm where people are accepting of who you are. I think it's very important, though, to talk to a lot of service groups, because not only are you having potential employers there, but you are helping to demystify a population of people who... So as you said, everybody deserves a second chance.
Well, and they're not really understood. I mean, I can get it. I don't like people committing crimes either, but crimes do happen. And the fact that I've worked with these folks and actually got to dig into the details of their lives and seen the, I don't know, you know, not always really horrible, but often quite horrible experiences that they had as children. They living in poverty, growing up in homes with people with substance abuse and mental illness. I mean, where are they going to get the pro-social support if they're surrounded by that all their life? That's their normal. People that have been traumatized and physically, psychologically, emotionally abused. I mean, those have tremendous impacts on your ability to learn and be successful, as well as health and mental health and substance abuse. So they've got all these different constellations of things going on. But if we can help them get a handle on them, and sometimes what I found often with even adult offenders is they had never really sat down to think about what it would even feel like to be successful. They don't even know. They haven't been able to get that image in their mind. And they don't really believe in themselves anymore because they failed themselves, they've failed their families for so long that they've given up. So imagine dusting yourself off from that condition and then having some success and feeling good about yourself when you haven't had that opportunity for a very long time. That's tremendous. And again, they're part of our community.
Well, very well said, sir. I thank you so much for being on Thursday Night Talk and talking about this wonderful, new, unique program that our county has. And there's nothing like a hand up, a hand to take you to a place where you can feel successful, even if it's little baby steps at the time.
It's always going to be baby steps. Yeah, good stuff. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you so much. And I want to leave with one of the greatest weightlifters the world has ever seen. Started his career in an internment camp during World War II. Tommy Kono, the only Olympic weightlifter to have set world records in four different weight classes, won gold in the 52 Olympics in Helsinki, gold in the 56 Melbourne Games, as well as silver in Rome in 1960. He was also Mr. Universe three times. When asked once if he knew Arnold Schwarzenegger, he replied, "Arnold knows me." At the age of 12, Tommy Kono and his family were removed from their home in Japanese Alley in Sacramento, California, and relocated to Tule Lake Segregation Center near the Oregon border, where young Tommy was introduced to weightlifting and bodybuilding, becoming arguably the greatest weightlifter of all time. Born in Sacramento in 1930, Tommy Kono died last year at age 85 in Hawaii. I want to thank Bill Damiano, our callers, and you, our listeners. Until next month, peace, Frog.
Thanks for listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Thank you to our host, Brenda Starr, and guest, Bill Damiano. Thanks to Thursday Night Talk producer, Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares is up next. Why did so many rural working class voters sit out the election or vote for Donald Trump? Next on Thursday Night Talk, host Eric Kirk and anti-poverty activist Nick Smith discuss the challenges presented by elitism, real or perceived, in various progressive movements. Join us January 12 at 7 p.m.
Donors to KHSU include Crestmark Architectural Millworks, specializing in the fabrication and installation of commercial cabinetry and custom millwork products. Locally owned and operated since 1997, the company is dedicated to upholding the core values of enjoyment, integrity, creativity, and respect. Learn more at crestmarkam.com. Donors to KHSU also include Six Rivers Optical, offering a large selection of eyewear and sunglasses and contact lenses. Also, same-day service is available